Welcome to the Brave Plug Podcast, Season 2, Episode 6, with Agnes and Sibongile.
Welcome back to the Brave Plug Podcast, Season 2, a podcast where we share inspiring stories, hear inspirational testimonies from the bravest ladies at Silo. So thank you both for being here, and I'm going to punt it to my co-host Tumi for today's topic and an introduction of our exciting panel today.
Thank you, Shanice. So we are joined today by Agnes and Sibongile, and we will be discussing purposely raising neurodivergent children. So in today's episode, we will delve into the journey of raising neurodivergent children, emphasizing intentional strategies, and also just understanding and support that can foster their unique strengths and challenges. And maybe just before we dive deep into it, if you could please, Agnes and Sibongile, just give a brief intro about who you are, then we can get started.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity. My name is Agnes Davids, mother to two wonderful kids, eldest daughter being on the spectrum, but son being atypical. So, yeah.
That's lovely. It thank you.
Thank you very much, ladies. Name is Sibongile Masemola. I'm a mom of two as well. A nine-year-old girl and a four-year-old boy. My nine-year-old is the one who is currently on the spectrum.
Lovely.
Yes. Thank you both for sharing. So I think for the sake of the listeners, and even for myself, because I really want to learn more about this and just educate myself. Mm-hmm. So can you maybe just define neurodivergence and the spectrum of neurological differences? And then also if you can just go a little bit deeper and discuss the importance of viewing neurodiversity as a natural variation in human cognition. Mm-hmm.
So maybe I will start. Yes. For me personally, I think that neurodivergent children or people, their brains just function differently. I think us who are defined as normal, we do things in a very straightforward way, and it's either A or B and never anything different, where they view the world from a different perspective, if I can put it in plain English. So they see the world differently, more colorfully, and more positive. I think we very negative, where they focus on positivity and what is more colorful, the more colorful part of what it is, if I can put it that way.
I love that. Sibongile, do you have anything to add to that?
So I think she explained it so beautifully, right? And I think maybe what I can also add is that it's just how people with different brains actually learn. How she was saying, how they see the world, right? Mm. How they think, how they process their thoughts. It's completely different to what a neurotypical person would actually do on a daily basis. But I think taking the word variations, it's also just about embracing the different brains, which are actually having different variations on a daily basis. So, so I think that's it, yeah.
Oh, lovely. And you know, how, if we can just speak on the home environment, right? How do we create... You both mentioned that you've got like other children as well. How do you make your home to be more inclusive? And outside the home, do you go to like, do you go to like sensory friendly spaces, or how do you manage that? Because I know like sometimes, especially at church, if the music is too loud for some children, they can barely focus, or if there's too much light, you know, it throws... I don't want to say throw them off, actually, but it. I don't know how they process it. Maybe let me pause there before I say something wrong.
No problem.
I think what made it easier was the fact that having that type of child as a first child. So it was very, once obviously they were diagnosed, you rely on specialists to actually first tell you what it is they think she would like, what she won't like, what you can try do. It's a learning curve as it goes along. Mm-hmm. And you also kind of get cues from the child themselves, where they are comfortable, where they're not. So it's mm-hmm. a trial and error in the beginning. But after that, you are able to set things in place for them so that they are comfortable. And obviously, any new place you're going to for the first time, you have to also leave space for disappointments or having to leave earlier than planned because of certain things. Mm-hmm. But we've also been very lucky, if I can put it that way, by having supportive family members that also understand, that also learned mm-hmm. with us throughout this journey, mm-hmm. And also a very accommodating church as well, mm-hmm. Where she goes to the normal Sunday school, mm-hmm. but when she feels overwhelmed or they'll ask her, do you want to go to the sensory friendly class? And mm-hmm. then she'll say yes, and they'll normally just take her there. So with me is the fact that she can now communicate. It was more difficult when she couldn't communicate, where she can tell you whether or not she's comfortable in a certain space. Mm-hmm. And things at home, she's adapted to, mm-hmm. and we've also adapted to what to have there and not have. So yeah. So basically it's just a form of communication with the child to see what it is they like, but trial and error, I would say.
Yeah. Of course. So I think I loved what you said earlier when you said what we deem normal, right?
Yes.
Because in the eyes of the Lord, we are all made perfect in His image.
True.
So there should be no differentiation True. Between maybe a child that needs a little bit more attention versus your other children who can obviously function a bit more easily in the world. So I think to educate even me, because I really want to know like how we can help you as parents and also help your children and make life easier for them. You touched briefly on communication styles. Can you just go a little bit deeper for us and maybe just share like the preferred communication techniques that we should be mindful of in these settings, and also how we can pick up when like nonverbal cues or when to be nonverbal, if either of you can just touch on that.
Yeah. So I think just to take you guys a bit back, right, with creating those strategies and that setup for the kids at home, consistency and routine is really important, right? Because the more you feed into that routine, it becomes easier for them, right? The anxiety is lowered because now they're much more calmer, or there's an expectation from the kids in terms of, I understand what my setup is based on, right? Mm. Which then also links to the communication part. So for example, with my Busi, she's 9, she's nonverbal. And we're using different communication styles at home that we have set up, right? Which can include visual cards that we have around the house. And as part of a routine as well, having to incorporate that, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's bath time and just picking up that flashcard and showing her that it's actually bath time currently, right? And sometimes it's also body language. I know we were talking about it with Agnes just outside that. Another body language for her recently is that with the routine, she knows that her father is the one who would partake in terms of bath time. So she wouldn't come to me, you know. When it's bath time, she goes to her father, pulls him by the hand, and literally walks with him to the bathroom, right? Mm-hmm. And that for me is communication. And I think because we always think communication is something which is verbal, mm. right? But with kids who are on the spectrum, behavior also is communication. Mm. So it's always important that even in a church setup, at home, whether in restaurants, you look at the child's behavior and the behavior will tell you at the moment what the child needs. It's the child communicating to you at that very moment. So for me, it's always important that let's look at the different types of communication styles. Another thing that I can add with Busi's routine, we're also currently doing argumentative alternative communication, where you are using digitalized tools, where it's an iPad, it's got some of those flashcards, but it's a speaking device, where she can actually just choose a picture of water on the iPad and then it says water. She can actually make sentences. It is a process, obviously, right, with consistency and routine. Mm. We're hoping that one day she might get to a point where she can make out a full sentence using the iPad, where the iPad can say, I want water. But that's actually Busi communicating. It's just that she's using the tool as a platform at that moment to communicate.
That's amazing. I just want to ask you a follow-up, because as somebody that's in like the tech and AI space, I love that you're incorporating like modern techniques into your child's life. Can you maybe just give advice to some parents out there on how they can be more progressive with times and how to incorporate that into their children's routine? If either of you could share on that.
Yes, I think I can add. I think for me, it's always important, especially with how digitization is actually moving now, right? Yeah. You look in a simple setup at work in terms of where we are now from where we actually started.
Yep.
So for me, it's about how can you then as a parent go out there to find the necessary information. But you find that sometimes it's the unfortunate part that the resources are not easily accessible, right?
Yeah.
And easily available to the, because it comes with the cost, right? Obviously, it's having to get the iPad for the child, having to download the software. Because another example I can give is with the software, it's not something which is based in South Africa. So through Busi School, we're actually getting the licensing, right? Yeah. So I think then for the tech industry, it's about how can we look at what other countries are doing and how we can actually implement that in South Africa, for example, which it can come at a cheaper cost, right? Where it can be an app, for example, where the parent doesn't need to get an iPad, but you can use your phone, you know? Because you find that in the family, we might be a household of five people. Every individual has a mobile device, you know? So it's about how can we then actually start doing that? But also at the same time, I think what speaking to digitization as parents is about the information that we actually need. How can we use the tool that we have when we go on Instagram, go on TikTok to actually find the necessary information and use that? So I think, yeah, that's it for me. I don't know about Agnes.
No, on the technology part, no.
I love that, because you when you're speaking about education part of it, right? Can you guys just share success stories and just advice for working with educators and other specialists, and maybe how your experience has been?
Okay. So me personally, I am an over communicator, if I can put it that way. So wherever I take my child to or meet any new educator or therapist, I will always over-explain what my child has, what her traits are, what it is she does and does not do. Because I feel like it starts with us as parents accepting the child as they are and accepting what the issue is at that point in time so that we can actually assist them. So, and I also do that so that the educators can be open to communicate to me if they feel like she's doing something that is out of line or inappropriate, or if they want to better understand how to actually teach her or treat her during certain situations, because they do get overwhelmed. They struggle with their emotions a lot, and they also get very frustrated. So it's just communicating what to do in those setups to maybe try and calm her to the educator. Always assists a lot. Like my daughter, for instance, she either has to have a wet wipe. I know it's weird. A wet wipe or a Barbie doll. And those are the only two things she uses as stemming mechanisms to actually calm her. So if she's very overwhelmed and she doesn't know what she's feeling, we usually just ask, do you want your dolly or wipe for a minute? And then she'll be like, 2 or 3 minutes, please. Then we know we have to give her some time. And then we'll talk to her about like, what were you feeling? How were you feeling? Why were you feeling that way? And we're still on the communication, so she can't describe everything so much, but we do try to have her express herself to say like what she was feeling and what made her feel that way, so that we can try and assist her the next time it happens.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. You know, when you mentioned that they become very emotional and they get easily frustrated, how do you then just manage or navigate rather the social experiences, maybe amongst friendships or helping them build friendships with other children?
So I'll just add on that one. So what currently with Busi at school, she's attending a special needs school, right? But her aftercare is an aftercare which is with the neurotypical kids and atypical kids, right? And I feel for me, that setup for her is so important, because with her brother being an atypical child, it makes it easier for her to build those relationships, right? Because now she's coming from outside from an environment where she's used to being, I'll make an example, like with kids who are nonverbal, and now she's with kids who can actually function on a day-to-day basis, right? But that builds the social skill for her. Mm-hmm. Another thing, I know they do it at school, but we also do it at home, where at school they would regularly have like wimpy visits, where it actually helps the kids in terms of a restaurant setup, where they get used to it, you know, in terms of understanding how do you order and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I also incorporate that at home as well to say, over the weekends, if it might be like an errand run, and if I have to go to one store specifically for like 10 minutes, it's those small things that we do consistently and regularly so that it can help to build those social skills for her. Because I feel sometimes you might find that as a parent, you want to close off your child because you have that fear that they might not be able to cope, right? Yeah. But sometimes it's a trial and error. It's a trial and error journey where you're like, today we'll try it. They might have a meltdown and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But we'll try again tomorrow and it might be a different situation. But also just to add in terms of how to calm them down. I know with some parents at home, you can have like a dark tent, you know, in the house where if they feel like they've overstimulated or they have sensory overload, they can just go to that corner into their tent and they can just regulate their emotions. Mm-hmm. So I think it's also important.
Wow. Can I just say that you guys are such amazing moms? Like sitting here listening to the both of you, I mean, it is so inspiring and just the way that you speak about your kids. It truly is so amazing. And they are really blessed to have you as moms. I just want to like say that. I felt like I needed to just say that out loud. Like, well done to the both of you. So you guys do a really good job about advocating for your kids. And like you said, Agnes, you're an over-communicator. Me too, but it's fine. Like, it's okay. It's good to let people know where you stand and how things are. So can you maybe just highlight the unique strengths and talents of neurodivergent children? You can even go specifically if you want to talk about your own kids. We'd just love to hear some of that.
With my daughter specifically, she is very loving. I think once she learns how to communicate properly, because she still bubbles a bit, she's very loving, and she likes to overshare as well. I think she gets it from me, and she likes to talk a lot, but then like we need to always calm her down and just be like, go a little bit slower. So she's 8, she's only doing grade 1 now, and she's realized that she can't read. But what that also brought about was her ability to actually memorize very well. So once she's heard a poem once or twice, she can actually say it out and remember it word by word. She actually, I'm going to say this very softly, fooled the teacher before. Because the teacher thought she could read. And the first thing I asked her was, have you read this book to her before? And she was like, yes. And I'm like, no, she can't read. She just remembered what you said.
Wow.
So she has a very, very good memory. That's what we picked up now. And then she enjoys doing poems and she'll even start acting it out. Like there's one that she's doing now that it's apples, apples. But I want to eat those apples after she's done with the poem because the way she describes it, and she'll even add in her body language. So that's one of her strengths that we recently figured out that she has. As good memory and as well as being very well with poems and actually acting it out.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So that's one of her strengths.
So it's also like she's got very good listening skills.
When she feels like it. When she feels like it.
So with Boosie, it's the listening skills, and I would also say she loves music. As much as she's nonverbal, but they have this relationship with their brother where once he puts on Paw Patrol, if she's like sleeping, she like literally wake up, you know? Mm-hmm. And when it starts playing the song, she's jumping up and down in the lounge area. But I've noticed in terms of she's got that soft spot for music, you know? Mm-hmm. And if it's things that, like I said, repetitive at home, it's things that she picks up on. So she's a huge lover of music, yeah.
Sure. So maybe like for our listeners, right? Maybe like you've shared so much. Where can, what would you advise them? Like, if they want to build a community, a network with other parents, where would you say they could potentially start?
So for me, it's always important where, I think Agnes mentioned it earlier, acceptance, right? Mm. The minute you accept as a parent, you are able to unlock a new world for your child, right? Because you now, even though you might not have the understanding, but you've accepted that this is my journey and I'm just here to then actually support my child, right? So in terms of places where they can go to, I know currently in South Africa, you have like organizations, Autism South Africa, where people can actually go to their website and find out more information. There's Neuroverse Network, where people can actually also go out there, right? And Neurodiversity Center as well. It gives out a lot of information. But I think for me, it's about also as a parent, the more we tell our stories, the more actually we are able to shift the narrative, yeah, right? Absolutely. Because I, as a parent, I remember starting this journey like 9 years ago. I didn't have a reference within my community where I needed to actually walk this journey in terms of the tools that I needed, how I needed to walk this journey, right? And even with my parents, because my parents are used to raising atypical kids. Like I think Agnes mentioned it, I'm also the first in my family to have a neurodivergent child. And I didn't see people who actually looked like me, right? Yeah. Who walked the same journey with me. So what I had to do was to narrate my story so that other parents can take my journey and actually see that actually there's a huge possibility out there, right? Once I've accepted and when we drive awareness. And I think with the awareness part, we can never say it's enough, right? Mm-hmm. Even though we might share our stories and it's all different colors, yeah, which is very important, but it's also important that we also have this conversations, right? Yeah. When we have these platforms, we talk about our journeys and we share, because one, like I think we mentioned it earlier, one child with autism is completely different to the next child, yes, right? Yeah. But it's all through awareness that parents are actually able to see the difference. So I think for me, it's always about shifting the narrative, whether it's one post at a time, one podcast or vodcast at the time, of course, you know? Yeah. So I think for me, that's quite important. Yeah.
Sure. You highlighted that, you know, no two autistic children are the same, and it's just about bringing awareness. And I love that you mentioned that, because even we as humans, like, yeah, we are all like atypical people. We're not the same.
Yeah.
Personalities differ. The way we do things is so different. So, I mean, it shouldn't be something that you have to explain, but it's good that we have these kinds of platforms to explain these things.
Agreed.
So if you can just maybe from your experience share some of the mental health considerations that you've had to take for your children, and just share some of that for our listeners as well.
I was shocked to find out that our kids experience anxiety. Wow. Like in her recent appointment with her neurologist, she mentioned it and I was like, it can't be like a 9 year old, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think with societal norms, you would think it's like an adult, you know, someone who has an understanding in terms of their emotions and things like that. And how she put it for me, and then like it became a shock, you know, that actually even kids who are neurodivergent actually go through a roller coaster of emotions and mental well-being, right? But also as a parent, you know, I then started thinking in terms of there are moments where you aren't able to identify that you burn out,
yeah,
because you're on this roller coaster on a daily basis. You don't have that time out for yourself, you know. You're juggling between two kids. You're struggling to find the balance, you know. It was also something we spoke about with Agnes, where I was like, in the earlier stages with my son, I couldn't actually come to it in terms of how do I now raise a atypical child? Because I'm used to a neurodivergent child. I'm used to having to look out for certain things where she's not meeting her milestones. And now I'm on a journey where now I need to like dial down everything that I know and just allow him to be, you know? So I think it's important that we're able to identify now where things are becoming too much. Mm-hmm. It's either for your child, but also you as a mom, you as a dad, right? We don't talk about burnout for dads as well, you know? And I think it's a conversation that we also have to actually embark on. But I think for me, it's about taking that time out for yourself. If you feel like it's just too much, when you're like, daddy, please stay with the kids. I just want to go, even if it doesn't have to be like a restaurant, you know? I have this thing with me where I'll just drive around, listen to music, go to a parking lot and just sit, you know? Just to have that time out so that when I come back to my kids, I'm more energized. I'm able to fill into their cups and it makes it easier.
Yeah. And just maybe to add on to what she's saying, it's difficult, I think, with the neurodivergent children to see when they're busy having a meltdown if you are drained.
Of course.
You are now tired and have absolutely no energy and you start being irritated and not realize that all they're doing is trying to seek your attention. So it all starts with you because they pull their energy from you. So you have to take care of yourself first as well in order to ensure that they are in good well-being.
I like that you say that, right? Because there might be a mother, there might be a father out there who's feeling the burnout, but they're too scared to admit to themselves to say, can I please have time out? You know, it's very common, especially for women, to have the mommy guilt when you're having that time when you have to fill your cup and pour back into yourself.
It's very difficult to ask for help, I agree.
But I also feel like Agnes mentioned it earlier, the importance of building a community, right?
Yes.
But, and the reason why I'm saying a but, it's because the community needs to come from a place where they also understand, right? Yes. Because me having to go out there and ask for help, for example, from my sister, she needs to have an understanding of how to actually take care of Boosie, you know? So you sometimes find that as families, we are also stuck in a circle where we do have the support, but it's not the support that actually has, I wouldn't say even like the necessary skills, but it's that understanding in terms of, if I leave my child with you, can I actually go away and just have a breather without having to worry about anything, you know? So it's also about when we build those communities, how do we also educate them as parents? Which is, it's another load on us, but you have to do it, you know? To say, I know I did it with my family when Boosie was diagnosed. I bought a book for people to read about neurodivergent kids, right? But it's also the willingness from them to say, I'm building this community, I'm providing you guys with the tools. Are you actually willing to meet us a family halfway so that when we need that help from you, you're actually available?
Wow, that's a lot.
It is.
That's a lot. So I think you both your kids are very young. So you guys are still in a phase where they're growing, they're learning, and you're having to adapt with them. So I think in closing, or our last question, can you maybe just discuss the preparations that each of you are taking to ensure that they have life skills development? And also, just what are you doing to prepare for their independence in the future currently?
I think that is a hard pull to swallow.
Of course.
Because I don't think while we're in this moment, we never actually think that they have to one day be independent. Because we've been thrown in this boat where we have to constantly be there to assist and always be telling people, you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to do that at that time, and this time she has to get that pull and get this food. So it's very difficult. But she's done something very similar to what I did. So our kids are obviously both in remedial schools, but she goes to an aftercare, at a normal aftercare, where none of those kids are in special schools. But that is also to teach her to actually blend in with society and people that are not the same as her, if I can put it that way. She's actually once come home and said, she just said, Mom, am I different? And I was like, we're all different, but you are just extra special because that's how God made you. So that also just assists her to also not depend on me so much because they, I'm not even allowed to go in. She has to go in by herself. She has to be a big girl, carry her own bag, like small activities that she has to do just to build her confidence so that whenever I'm not around or not in that setting, she's able to cope and she's able to communicate. And I must say it has improved her communication as well in how she speaks, because we've been used to hearing her mumble and understanding what she's saying, but now she has to speak clearer. Because she's realized that other kids can't hear what I'm saying. Yeah. And she'll even go and speak slower. So little things like just having her pack her own lunch bag or having her pull her own bag to school or into the schoolyard, I feel like that has built not just her confidence, but also independence. So like now in the mornings when I'm like, oh, Aaronique, what are you going to have for lunch? She'll be like, I already packed it.
Oh,
wow.
Except that there will be nothing healthy in it. But
a win is a win. We take the wins as we come, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So just can I just ask, Agnes, when you got that question, were you prepared for it? Is it something that you had always anticipated it would come? Or how did it land when you heard it?
I think we've always told her that she's special in our eyes, but that question came a bit as a shock because she's still too young to realize that she's different, even if she was a normal or not a neurodivergent child. Like, I was like, it did come as a shock, and but through God's grace, I knew how to answer it in that moment in time. I also have a daughter that absolutely loves church. And she knows that God is always by her. And whenever it's difficult to do anything, she just needs to close her eyes and ask for his assistance. So I usually just tell her, like, if you don't know how to answer something or if somebody makes a comment that you don't like, just go into your quiet space and think about what it is. And if you don't understand it, wait till you get home and ask mommy. So when she asked it, it did come as a shock, but my answer came very quickly because it was something expectant, but not at that age. Mm, sure. So now you have to also stoop down to her level a little bit and explain it in a way where she would understand it. So it can't be using big words. But special is an easy word.
Sure. And I'm sure it also builds like confidence, right? If a kid wanted to be funny at school, they're going to be like, no, but I'm special. And my mommy told me that I'm extra special.
100%.
Yes. Sibongile, would you like to just add on that as well?
So I think on the future part, right, I think one of the biggest thing that as parents we are always fearful of is what will happen to my child when I'm no longer here, right? And I think that's one thing that weighs a lot on like parents. I know with us, with our little one, it might be like too much for him, which is always something that I'm always concerned about, right? Where we're taking him on the journey of understanding what neurodivergent is, even if he's four, but just for him to understand, because we feel that should anything happen to us, he's that one person who from a young age would have built certain skills in terms of how to take care of his sister, right? But another thing that, and I think it's something I always talk about it at school, at Busy School, that I wish it's something in other schools it would be there, where they recently introduced a respite center at the school because they've got a junior and a senior side, and she's currently at Apricot Tree in Benoni. So what the respite center is going to do is, as parents, if we feel like we've had, like we have that burnout, we want to take some time out on a weekend, we can register Busy at the school and she can stay there for the entire weekend, right? So that's what they introduce currently. But in the long term, as we're speaking as parents in terms of a community, is about how can we then in the long term turn the school into a home for the kids who, should anything happen and the sibling is also not around, what will actually happen, right? Where it's like a live-in situation. So those are also part of the conversations that we're actually busy with currently with my husband and the school, to say, let's actually then plan long time, right? In terms of how do we ensure that should anything happen to us, even the sibling themselves, they're equipped, right? Because I think another thing, and I think Agnes can attest to this, that taking care of a child with special needs is very costly. whether it's looking for education, whether it's looking for tools that you can use at home. So you're already thinking in terms of how do I set up my child to ensure that anyone that will be left behind with my child, they'd be able to actually take care of the child, right? Wow. Whether it's going to financial institutions and having to find the right life cover, for example, mm-hmm. having to have conversations regarding trust funds for your kids, right?
Yeah.
In terms of how do you do that?
Financial planning,
mm-hmm. right? Musa is currently 9, but we're already having those conversations at home, sure. you know, and having conversations with the same community to say, mm-hmm. guys, we are planning financially for Busi to ensure that should anything happen, you guys will actually be covered in terms of everything. But it's also having to ensure that do they understand the weight that it comes with, you know, because you don't want to be as a parent where you've put in this whole entire work in terms of Busi's 16 years of life, where she's been getting the therapy sessions, for example.
Yeah.
Then should anything happen to me due to financial reasons, then she's no longer able to do that, right? Which means now that she's able to take 10 steps back at a moment where she needs to now thrive as a young adult living with special needs.
Sure. Yeah. Ladies, thank you so much for being so vulnerable with us and sharing your stories. I know that we have definitely learned so much from this episode. And not only did you share on neurodivergent children, yes. but you shared on taking care of yourselves as parents and also just talking on the insurance, the risk management and continuity. So we're so grateful to have you here. And
thank you.
Thank you. Stay blessed.
Thank you.